the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Angus Ketchout with Mississippi State University. I'm an extension entomologist here. Got a special guest with myself today and Dr. Jeff Gore, who's an entomologist at Stoneville. But our special guest today is Jeff North, an independent crop consultant that lives in Madison, Mississippi. How you doing, Jeff?
Good. Doing great. Had a little trip. Time to come up here. Got a little invitation to come up today. I appreciate very much our opportunity to come visit and throw a few things around.
Yeah, we're glad to have an independent crop consultant here with us today. This is our first entomology podcast of the year for 2019. So I think we got some really interesting things to kind of set the season up for this 2019 season.
That's right. I think what we're going to do is we're going to hit a couple of things this year. I think we're going to start. We're going to talk a little bit about seed treatments and cotton, and then we're going to move into, you know, just kind of what we might expect in 2019, given the mild winter that we've had, and make a few predictions that we'll probably be wrong about later. But we're going to try that.
Never. That's the way it goes when you try to predict insects.
And absolutely. You know, I remember I used to always – I don't know, Jeff, if you get these calls or not, but I used to get calls every year from like the people that work at the Dow Jones wanting us to kind of – I guess they were hedging what they thought insecticide sales or whatever might be, and they'd always want me to predict how bad of a winter, how it would affect insects. And, you know, I think what they were doing is maybe working for some of the big companies, trying to figure out maybe how much sales would be. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably the true. And, you know, I even get calls from, like, local TV stations. Hey, what kind of impact did this winter have on insect populations?
And one of the things that I've figured out over the years is, you know, we can make those guesses, but we may be wrong. And we'll get into some of that. In fact, most of the time we are wrong, but we'll get into that a little bit here today.
But we do have some historical trends where we can talk about potentials.
That's exactly right.
It's like some of the guys trying to predict the price of cotton. Say, well, something is going up, something is going down. I do too.
That's exactly right. That's a good point. So, look, let's kick on into some of the serious stuff now and get that going. Talk a little bit about cotton seed treatments. You know, I think everyone, at least in Mississippi, Jeff North, that is, I think you'd probably agree with this. We've seen resistance with tobacco thrips, with thimethoxam, which is the cruiser-based seed treatments. We've completely moved away from that. But here in the last couple years, we've almost, all the cotton essentially, except for small percentages, is treated with some sort of imidacloprid-based seed treatment. And one of the recommendations that Dr. Gore there and myself have made a lot throughout the state is just the addition of acephate, either as a seed treatment or sprayed in furrow in addition to that imidacloprid. And we have had tremendous feedback about it. In your business, with the people that you work with, have y'all adopted some of these? Are you looking at it or hearing
almost,
about it?
Almost 100%. And what's concerning to me this year, with the inclement weather we've had this spring, is we're pushing the envelope a little bit on our calendar date. Our planting conditions, our soil conditions have not been that great. We've got another rain in the forecast coming up, and it's going to be, in my opinion, so critical to get this right the first time, because seed may become short. We don't have any opportunities for redos, for replants. So my thinking is, let's get the best seed treatment we can get to begin with. Let's top it off and make sure that we do everything we can to plant, not only in good conditions, but to have everything right on that seed.
You know, I've had a lot of questions this year early about, and it's really surprised me that there's a lot of people that are actually opting to go with a base seed treatment and spray all of their insecticides in furrow, whether it be an Admire Pro or generic imidacloprid by itself, or even mixing that with the acephate as well. And that's, I think, a really good option.
Well, I think seed in-furrow treatments are an excellent choice. What I worry about, especially in our area, is that growers are going to get in a hurry. We're going to have a narrow window, and they're not going to want to take the time to fill up water rigs and work with nozzles. Once that planter gets started, they want to cover these acres. But from an infer standpoint, from an efficacy standpoint, it's excellent choice.
Yeah, and, you know, and from my experience the last several years of testing a lot more inferrers, I mean, if I had a choice, my number one would always be an inferrer. And the reason I say that is, you know, you can just deliver so much more product in a given area versus what can be stuck to a seed coat. For instance, this acephate over-treatment on cottonseed, we can only put 6.4 ounces per hundredweight. Yet if we spray it inferrer, we can get a pound.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what I recommend. And I just feel like it does a lot better job. The other real big drawback of the over-treatment is if you over-treat somebody's cotton with acephate downstream and something happens and you don't plant cotton, you're stuck with it for the most part. You can't give it back.
That's accounted for then.
That's exactly right.
It's accounted for then.
And I think all of those options are better than just trying to wait and manage thrips from a foliar standpoint. I think we come out money ahead by either putting it on the seed or spraying it in furrow rather than trying to get that timing exactly right with the foliar spray.
And even if we have to complement the seed treatments with the foliar application, that plant's still in good shape for the most part. It's not coming out of the ground susceptible to being fed on, having foliar damage to it. And it's just always, I don't know, to be more proactive than reactive. Instead of getting into a curative situation, once you're getting damaged, and when these cotton seedlings come up, I mean, these thrips are on it. They're on it right then. And you start seeing this wrinkling up.
Yeah, and we feel confident that this recommendation of the acephate, look, acephate's not new. I mean, you can look 30 years ago putting acephate on cottonseed, so that's not anything new. I think the fact that we're mixing it with or putting it on top of an imidacloprid is something that's a little different that's been done in the past, because I would never recommend acephate alone on a seed. I mean, it's important to know that we're talking about this is in addition, as Dr. Gore said, either with an Miropro or some kind of imidacloprid sprayed in for or that already came on the seed as a seed treatment. And really, I'm not going to say never, but we have definitely reduced the need for foliar sprays.
Right. What kind of data, what kind of yield data do you have, I give this to both of you, on severely damaged seedlings by thrips? Not just from a delayed harvest standpoint, but from yield damage. Do you have data that shows yield reductions from, you know, bad damage?
Yeah, and I think what we've seen in our environment is it's probably going to max out at about 200 pounds of lint. Mm. And that's the worst-case scenario with bad growing conditions the rest of the year. The one thing from a thrip standpoint is cotton can compensate for thrips damage. And in some situations with light thrips damage, you can actually see a yield increase.
Right.
In some situations, but of course,
but not something that, to bank on.
Depends on what happens the rest of the season. The one thing that we do always see from thrips is a delay in maturity, which is going to affect every other insect that we manage throughout the rest of the year.
Right. You know, and another one of these kind of swapping pests a little bit, but we're kind of set up for a cutworm issue. Cooler spring, wetter conditions, grassier fields. I haven't seen much results in the past for cutworm control with these seed treatments. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
No, I agree completely. And I mean, I'm not going to say they have zero impact on a cutworm, but by the time they eat enough of these plants or cut enough of the plants to be impacted at all, if they're going to be impacted, you have the problem anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, if you have any kind of residue in the field whatsoever, I mean, it's still a really good practice. Just put a low rate of a pyrethroid behind the plant or at plant and then scout and do as needed after that.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, seed treatment, I'd never count on that for a cutworm.
And this is surely a spring we don't need broken stands.
Yeah, that's
absolutely right. You know, the other thing, the other option that we hadn't talked about yet from a thrips management standpoint is Aldicarb. And I've actually had several phone calls, and I know you have as well, Angus. But we're going to have some Aldicarb going out around the state, and that's another really good option for thrips control.
Still looking at 3.5 to 4 pounds?
Yeah, that's pretty much right where we're at. In fact, the people that have really kind of are jumping back to the Aldicarb bandwagon, it's not just a thrips thing. Most of them are doing it because they have a nematode problem.
Right.
Those guys are the ones that are going 4 to 5 pounds, 4 on the real light dirt, if it's a little bit, you know, got a little more mix in it, up to the 5. But for thrips, yeah, I'm great with three and a half.
That's an awesome product. What we've seen in the past, or as of in the past few years, our infrastructure, we don't have the applicators on our planters now. We have to make an investment to do that. But from a product standpoint and a thrips control standpoint, I mean, you can't hardly beat Altigar. When you look in these trials and these plots, I mean, it just shines.
Yeah, there's no question. In fact, I talked to a guy the other day. He did the math, and based on the fact that he was after nematodes and thrips, and when he looked at his option and he knew the performance of this product for that, he was better off, and he said he was going to do this, was actually invest in granular boxes just to take care of that, and he was still going to be money ahead the way he did his math.
That's the way to look at it.
Yep, without a doubt, money talks in this business.
There's no question, but he's right. It's gaining popularity. We're getting more and more calls about it.
I think Georgia has been using it a good bit in the past few years compared to us in Mississippi, right?
They have. In fact, you know, they had their label, I believe, a year or two before us. And you know, of course, we were hearing from the consultants and the academics over there that, man, it looked just as good as Timbic used to look. And it kind of just started, you know, gaining a little momentum. It's expensive now. It's about twice as much as it was when it went off the market as Timbic. Wow. But if you do the math and you think about if you use it in the right situations, it works.
Well, if you think about the tools in our arsenal, with already having a resistant thiamethoxam and the neonics with the imidacloprid coming next, I mean, we can't ever have enough tools in our arsenal. And if we have an option to add to it, we just have to figure out how to manage it.
But yeah, that's exactly right. The number of products that we have available is going to be critical over the next few – well, always, not just the next few years, but making sure we have the right products that do the job that we need them to do to make the growers the most profitable is always going to be important.
And not just in thrips. When it comes to plant bug, bollworm, our tools are limited, and we've got to, you know, hopefully come up with more options down the road, but we've got to really manage what we have.
I think you're right. We're going to have to manage what we have and protect what we have, and having more products allows you to protect them because you can rotate modes of action out. And we're going to have to do that, no question.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about the cool, wet spring affecting cutworms. And that's true. That's generally when we see our worst cutworm problems. But like we talked about at the beginning, is we always get questions about predicting what impact the winter is going to have on insect populations. And like Angus said, whenever we predict, we're always going to be wrong. So. But, you know, the one thing that I will say from a cotton insect management standpoint is typically when we have a lot of rain in the spring, it makes a lot of those wild hosts very healthy, and right, they're in really good shape that can blow up some pretty big plant bug populations.
Right.
Now, if there's one insect we can make a prediction about in Mississippi, it's usually plant bugs because
right,
they're always bad. Some years they're worse than others, but they're always –
So you're saying with the lush growth, the lush vegetation, that's making it very conducive for reproduction for pests, early season pests before our crops emerge?
Well, especially something like plant bugs right now, this time of year. Now that it's warming up, the rains have, they hadn't gone away, but they've become less frequent now.
Right.
And a lot of these wild hosts are starting to flower. So that's just like plant bug heaven right now.
When will you begin to do some sampling in some of these wild hosts just to see what numbers? Are you starting now or not?
Well, we're starting now. I mean, I haven't done any myself to this point today, but it'll be probably after this next rain we get tomorrow, we're going to start sweeping the wild host.
And what plant species, y'all? Queen Anne's lace, what? Clovers, what? All of them?
Clovers mainly, yeah, crimson and white. That's been the two that we're focusing on. We've actually done quite a few. As of now, we haven't caught it. We haven't really found anything exciting at all, at least from a red-banded. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for red-banded stink bugs because I think everybody knows we're coming off of a mild winter, and our focus right now is red-banded. And, you know, you and I were talking before we started this, and with you living further south around Madison, I mean, we've been sweeping, and I've went south a lot too, But I haven't found anything but tarnished plant bugs, and I found quite a few of those last week. But you told me today that you've actually caught a few red-banded around Jackson area,
I was
right?
bored to tears, didn't have anything to do. I'd been hearing about people talking in South Louisiana that they were catching yep. them. I threw a sweep net in a truck, went right off the Madison, Mississippi exit at I-55, made a few sweeps, 20 or 30 sweeps, and caught two. And I said, well, look at that.
And that was at what date?
3 weeks ago.
So that, take three.
Around we were the first in full of, bloom. We
first
were,
of April, first week of April.
First week of April. We were in full bloom, our clover, you know, being further south, yeah. 120 miles south. And I noticed on the way up today, the clover is yeah. blooming further along. And I mean, we're starting to dry down. But that's kind of concerning that, you know, not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's that master's degree in entomology paying off for you.
Yeah, that's right.
Getting bored on a spring day and picking up a sweep net and going and sweeping bugs. I'd have picked up a fishing pole or a shotgun.
Or a turkey call.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was actually a little offended that he caught two red banded and haven't called either of us to tell us.
Well, if I make it back in time this afternoon before this front hits, I may go try again. I'll send you some photos.
Well, look, that goes, something. You know, while we're out here talking, and I know we got a lot of our consultants that listen to this, any of y'all that do that kind of stuff that supplements what we're doing, let us know. And if you can, I guess the only thing I would ask you, if you could kind of keep up with your number of sweeps, because you know you could say, hey, I caught two red banded, but I say, how many sweeps you do? And you said 10,000. Okay, that's probably not a big deal, but you did 20 or 30 and caught two. That's a lot a month ago,
especially I would say
that's a big deal,
right.
So if y'all could keep us in the loop, and we'll use that information to keep everybody else in the loop. So we would really appreciate that. One thing else I'll bring up as far as predicting insects, red banded is probably the only one I've ever felt really comfortable with, even though we don't have just decades of experience with it. That one definitely seems to follow what we find in the ditch banks. It's pretty predictable. Plant bugs, we've noticed that you can catch millions of them, and they're out there, they're in the ditch banks, but it doesn't always correlate with what's in cotton unless you go mow that ditch bank that's adjacent to it. Bollworms, and let me get y'all's opinion on this. This is just anecdotal, and it's something I've noticed over the years. Bollworms have typically been, historically, when I go back and look at it, more of a problem behind a really cold winter. And Dr. Scott Stewart at UT and myself had lots of talks about this. Jeff, you and I have too. But the thoughts on that is it kills the winter kills the parasitoids out, which lets them kind of flourish in the spring. So any thoughts on bollworms?
Well, the one thing I'll mention about bollworms is, you know, a lot of the old historical literature that talked about bollworm overwintering and diapause during the winter, the number one factor that impacted mortality of pupae in the soil wasn't temperature, it was water. Yeah, so
right.
I think probably a lot of the, well, I mean, obviously there's places in the Delta right now that are still underwater where there's no way a bollworm survived in
right.
those fields.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, we probably didn't have a lot of overwintering survival in Mississippi. Now, the key with bollworms is they can migrate a long ways. So we can start off the year without a big population, get a big migration in from Texas and South Louisiana by July and be right back.
And we may raise a lot of our own with a corn crop.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
You know, come out of corn and then pupate for the bloom in cotton too. But
yeah.
I remember this was going way, way back. In 1990, we didn't even get a lot of the cotton planted until the end of May and a lot of in June. I asked one grower, I said, will you plant any June cotton? He said, no, but I'll probably plant some May the 40th. And but that year was saturated, we were underwater, and that's when we were fighting tobacco budworm too, but we had the lightest Heliothus, and they've changed the genus of bollworm since then, but we had the lightest Heliothus pressure that we have had, but contrary, we didn't have the corn acres either.
Well, yeah, so. And one of the things, and I think, you know, all the entomologists and consultants, for the most part, you're probably, we have some evidence that would suggest what a cold winter and a warm winter would do and so forth. But the reason, and we were kind of jokingly saying we're always wrong, is for what you mentioned earlier, Jeff. you could have a winter, or a wet winter, or whatever. Let's just say it took out the largest portions of a whole population. But then you have this spring like we're having. In this spring, we have a lot of rain and decent weather, and we blow those wild hosts up. If only a few come out over winter, and if you had a good spring, a few can turn into a lot. And on the otherwise, we could have a winter where everything lives through the winter, but you have a really poor spring, mm-hmm. and they're weakened, and they
compromised.
Don't. And
right.
that's what complicates this and makes right. it very, very difficult to predict insect pressure.
Oh, the health of these pests coming off of lush crops, their fecundity could be great. We don't know that. So if they're in good shape.
You're going to have to define fecundity for a lot of folks listening, Jeff.
Well, I'll let y'all handle that.
Yeah, they can lay a lot of eggs. We'll give you that. Well, so look, we've discussed several things here today. We talked a lot about seed treatments as we opened this and kind of our recommendations on what we're recommending in cotton as far as some sort of imidacloprid-based product with either acephate applied as a seed treatment over the top of that or applied in furrow. We talked a little bit about AgLogic, the generic aldicarb that's out there now that some growers are adopting. And then we've kind of just tossed it around, talking a little bit about some of the predictions or thereof that we may have on insect problems this year. I think the real notable thing that came out of that conversation is our good friend here, Jeff North, the consultant, has been catching red-banded stink bugs when we've been looking desperately for him, and he ain't told any of us. So y'all are some of the first to hear that today. So we're gonna be plugging
tell
in
all
a little
your trade secrets
yeah,
now.
I realize that now. So
know, if I were going to urge growers to do one thing, I would say when this planting is coming up in the next week or two or three, get it right. You have your soil prepared right. Don't get in a rush. Take your time. Check your depth. Check your seeding rates. Make sure you dot the I's and cross the T's because, you know, we've got one good shot at this. We got to get it right.
Yep. I guess with that, we're kind of wrapping it up now. And Angus and I and probably Don Cook will be joining us, and we'll be doing several of these throughout the summer, try to get on somewhat of a regular basis and do some of these podcasts and just talk about the season as it progresses.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. We'll be back soon. Thank you.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.